You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Tim Cyclesman Wood, editor of Cycles News and Views on Cyclesman.com. He's speaking to us from Gulf Shores, Alabama. Welcome back to the show and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Tim, after the last rate cut by the Fed, do you think we're going to see more cuts this year, or are they going to hold steady?
No, I think we're going to see more cuts. I believe we talked about this in the last interview. I think we talked last on the 4th, and the Fed meeting was on the 10th. I'm not sure, but I want to say we did discuss this. But we have seen this entire rate cutting cycle has been the most aggressive in history. And, you know, you kind of got to ask yourself why. And I know that how do I say this? I know that this rate cutting cycle is being played. And when I say being played, I mean everything is politics, right? Everything is theater. And I know that Trump was calling Powell at some point, and I don't watch a lot of news, hadn't seen anything. I've been so out of pocket for the last month or so. But he was, you know, earlier last year, he was calling him too late, Powell, and all this kind of stuff. And it's just politics, just theater. But looking back in over 70 years of history, let me frame this another way. I have proven, I have a Fed model, and I have proven, and it's just a historical fact. You know, people look at, you know, they point to employment data, they point to this, that, and the other, and all kinds of stuff that Fed looks at for interest rates, you know, for their rate hiking, cutting cycles, and so forth. And that's really not so. It's not it what they look at and truly follow. And you can look at it in the form of a chart. You can look at it in the form of a spreadsheet, and it's clear. And I only know a handful of technicians and historians that truly understand this. But the Fed follows the 3-month T-bill rate. Now they can influence that T-bill rate. They can, you know, they can jawbone it up, which is exactly what they did in 2022, and they created this rate hiking cycle. So they can set the precedence, because everybody knows, don't fight the Fed, right? So they can set the precedence, they can use their tools and their toolbox to influence the short-term rate to get it to move like they want it to move. And this entire last, coming out of the 22 low, this entire last rate hiking cycle was totally fabricated. I mean, rates were trying to fall from zero. It was set up perfectly to do so, and they put, down to the day, they put a floor under the short-term rates using the reverse repo markets, and then jawboning the inflation scare that had not really taken hold then, supply chain issues, you know, that's when all that started, and they created this entire rate hiking cycle. So with that said, this entire cycle has been politicized, and then we finally get to, according to the model, we get to the peak of this rate hiking cycle. We plateaued throughout the last half of 23 and into September of 24, and then the rate cutting cycle began. So it's hard, you know, as this has gone on, time slips away pretty quickly. But, you know, we've been in a rate-cutting cycle since September of 24. And then what's unique about this rate-cutting cycle, though, is that if you look back in time, and like I said, I'm looking at this data going back into the 50s, and, you know, used to, the rate cutting cycles, the spread between the 3-month T-bill and the discount rate would get up, you know, well over a point, you know, 2 points or so, and before they would take action. So they were, you know, they would let rates run a little bit, and then as time progresses, and we get into the 80s and the overall rate cutting, you know, the how do I say it? It was numerous rate cutting cycles within, you know, the top, the interest rate top in the 80s. But, you know, you'd have a low in rates, and then you'd have a little counter trend rate hiking cycle, but then you'd get back into another cutting cycle. What I'm saying is the overall trend of rates since the 80s had been down. But every one of those cycles, still, the spread would get up around a point or so. So they would, again, they gave rates, you know, some breath, if you will, some, you know, to move. Well, since the 09 low, all we saw is that differential got even tighter coming out of, you know, the post 09 period. So then it got to where it would be like around, I don't know, just 0.75, 0.8, something like that, be less than a point, and the Fed would respond. Well, this entire rate cutting cycle, since it began in 24, they've become even more aggressive. And the range between a three-month T-bill and the discount rate moved to like less than 0.5 or right at 0.5, 0.4 to 0.5. So it's gotten, you know, paper thin. And so, again, to repeat myself to make it clear that this rate cutting cycle, in spite of what is being said about it, it has been the most aggressive rate cutting cycle in history. You know, going back, when I say history, going back into the 50s, as far back as this T-bill data goes. But then within that context, this last rate cut was the tightest spread of them all. So it was the December cut was the most aggressive rate cut in history, looking at this model and the spread differential. And, you know, you have to ask yourself, the question I ask is, why? Why are they so aggressive? And I think the answer is that the true state of the economy, we've talked about this, you know, it's not what it appears to be. You can look at the employment data. You can see that. You can look. I think we've been in recession for at least a year. It hasn't been called. There's ample data to suggest that. They don't acknowledge it. I think this thing is being papered over. Government spending, the debt creation is on an upswing. This last year we added, I believe, I don't have the data in front of me, but I did it a couple of days ago, and it was over, I think it was $2.2 trillion in the last 12 months. And so the government spending and trying to hold this thing is clearly the backdrop. It's clearly what's going on. And I think that this aggressive rate-cutting policy is part of that, and trying to paper over and make things, you know, try to hold this bubble together as long as they can, because I think ultimately they know that when this thing turns down, it could get out of control pretty quickly. And so I think we're going to see more rate cuts based on this aggression? The long answer, or the short answer to this long explanation, is based on the aggression we have seen so far in this rate cutting cycle, you betcha we're going to see, I think, more rate cuts. I think that's inevitable, yes.
Now, are mortgage rates set by the Fed?
No, mortgage rates are the short end is what is set by the Fed. They don't per se control the long end. You know, the short end is set, if you will, with the discount rates, and then from there the higher maturities, they kind of free float and do their own thing. Typically the long end tends to follow the direction that is set by the Fed with these rate hiking and cutting cycles. But, you know, talking about the long end, which is more reflective of mortgage rates, I have some concern about the long end. I'm not so sure. I'm not as convinced that the long end is going to behave and follow the short end as closely as it has in the past. I have some concerns about the long end, and maybe that in and of itself is telling us something. I'll know more. There's some cycle lows due now in the long end that I'm watching, and depending on how that behaves, it may be telling us. Some people I've talked to, some people read some things on the long end, and maybe there's, and I'm not saying I agree with this, I'm not saying I disagree, I'm just saying I don't know. But there's talk of bond default risk, and maybe I don't know. I mean, maybe there is something out there to where the long end is going to behave differently this time if we slip into that deflationary environment that I'm expecting with this downturn out of this long-term economic cycle. But I don't know if I answered the question or not, but I do have some concern on the long end.
Now, you said talk of bond default. What kind of bonds? Bonds are usually considered pretty safe, or it depends on the type of bond?
Yes, they are, and it depends on the type of bond, and so I don't know. I don't know with the mammoth, where are we at now? $38 trillion debt. I don't know. I don't know. Something just doesn't smell right on the long end for me. But we'll see as like I said, as we get this next cycle low in place, and we'll see how bonds the long end responds to that. I just don't know yet. They're not correlating as well as I'd like to see.
We'll have more with Tim Cyclesman Wood right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Tim Cyclesman Wood. Tim, what's your outlook for the stock market this year? Is it dangerously toppy?
Well, yeah, it has been. There's no doubt about that. There's absolutely no doubt about that. And I know that sounds like a broken record, but nothing there has changed. Of course it is. But at the same time, nothing has bitten. It's like, I don't know. It sounds like doublespeak, but it's not. I mean, I see what I see. There's no doubt of the bubble environment we're in. There's no doubt of the manipulation we're seeing to hold this thing together. And I think, digressing back to the interest rate cuts, I think that's part of that manipulation, that stimulus, if you will, the fuel, however you want to say it, to try to hold things together. The the denial of the data that suggests that we're in a have been in a recession. All of that, I think, is forms of manipulation. And yes, it's a frothy top. There's no doubt about it. And yes, I still think that we're facing this downturn out of this long-term economic cycle that has been completely fabricated based on, we've talked about that, based on Fed policy. All the previous cycles throughout history have been based on, sound economic underpinnings. And we've talked about that, the technologies of the time being, the railroads or the dot-com era, the post-World War II era, the Industrial Revolution, et cetera. And then this one since 2002 has just purely been based on monetary policy. So, yes, there's problems. In case there's new listeners, the first attempted downturn out of this current fabricated long-term economic cycle that began in 2002 occurred with the downturn out of the 2007 top, and then the second attempted downturn occurred with COVID, and now here we are with this frothy top again. It's even blown the bubble even higher, bigger, and here we sit facing this third attempted downturn. But at the same time, nothing has bitten. It just keeps going on and on and on, kind of like the Energizer bubble or the Energizer bunny, and the bubble just keeps getting bigger and bigger, and the balloon gets tighter and tighter, or however you want to look at it. So, I acknowledge that, we need to see some things. We have a Dow theory primary bullish trend change in effect. So, that tells us at this point that, until that changes and we see a bearish trend change, that we should expect higher prices. So I'm not speaking out of both sides of my mouth, being I acknowledge what I see, but it just hasn't set up yet. It's tried but nothing will bite, and it just keeps getting blown higher and higher and higher. Doesn't change the environment that we're in. It just makes it worse.
Now, taking a look at gold and silver, any thoughts on those precious metals in the new year?
Yeah, gold, you know, it has been just like equities, and silver pretty much follows gold. I mean, they're pretty much the same cyclical pattern. But gold, you know, we had a major top in October, and then an intermediate degree, in my world, an intermediate degree cycle low following in late October, and then this rally that has followed has been, you know, it was a test of that intermediate, that higher degree, or that October intermediate degree top. And, of course, we've bettered that high. And if you look back throughout history, there is a 9-year cycle from, and the cycle is measured from low to low. The cycle last bottomed in 22. Within that cycle, there are cycles. You know, there's a cycle that averages about a year in duration, and it is very, 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 very stretched. It bottomed in November of 24, and it's still moving up. That cycle has not peaked. And so what you tend to see with both gold and silver as they move into that higher degree 9-year cycle top is extreme moves, exactly what we have seen here. They just kind of go parabolic and stretch those lower degree, that, you know, like that annual degree cycle that I'm talking about. It just stretches it higher, pulls it like a rubber band higher as you push into that higher degree top. And that's what we have been seeing in this entire, since the late 24, that late 24 low, all throughout 25, it's just ramped up higher and higher and higher. That's exactly what we've seen. So I do think, it just like equities, it's an ending move, but until we get proper structure for it to bite and turn, you know, this can continue a while longer, just like equities. But my expectation is that once the downturn out of this 6 long-term economic cycle bites, that it's going to take everything with it. You know, maybe not initially at the exact same time, but it's going to take everything with it.
You said earlier in the interview you believe we've been in a recession for the past year. Why the big disconnect between what happens on Wall Street and on Main Street?
Well, I think part of that is the nature of the bubble. I think part of that is the nature of the propaganda associated with the bubble. I think part of that is, like I said, for example, if you just simply don't acknowledge to the public the signs of the true state of the economy, then you just kind of paper over it and you paint a facade that things are better than they are, and it kind of feeds on itself until it doesn't. And so I believe the best way I know how to describe it is it's just being papered over, and the realization hasn't set in. So I don't know if I'm answering your question or not, but I think there is a disconnect because of the environment that we're in, and the realization hadn't set in, and we haven't got to critical mass where it matters. So I don't know if that makes sense, but that's my opinion.
Anything about the crude oil market right now?
It's been leading. I think this is a sign of the deflation. It has been, there's a 3-year cycle in commodities. The 3-year cycle top in crude oil has been in place, and I have been saying in my updates that, you know, I thought that, you know, we've had some intermediate degree lows, and every time we'd get one, I'd say, okay, I'd acknowledge the low, but say, you know, this should be counter trend, and here's why. And that has been spot on. The crude oil market has actually been much easier to call than equities, and I think one reason for that is that, you know, it doesn't have the limelight that equities has. Everybody's focused on their 401k and what the stock market is doing. As long as oil is drifting lower and it's, you know, costs less to fill up your vehicle at the pump, and nobody cares, it's all good, right? But I think that what we're seeing here is that crude oil is signaling the deflationary pressures that loom. So, but yeah, crude oil, 3-year top has been in place, well, since back in 22 or 23. I'm not looking at a chart. And I think that any rally here is subject to be counter trend still.
The world right now is awash in crude oil. Does that mean that good economic times are ahead?
Well, on one hand, I see where you're going with that question. It's seemingly so. But on the other hand, the reality of it is that it is in the current environment, it's reflective of the deflation. And let me give you an example. If you look back in 06, 07, and you know, during that top, and I've got to remind everybody, I don't mean to beat a dead horse. I want people to try to understand this. Again, this entire current long-term economic cycle began at the 02 low. The first attempted downturn out of that low occurred with the 07 top. And I remind everybody that that was dubbed the worst financial crisis since the Great Depression. That was when we had the housing bubble. And I saw real estate in the area in the Gulf Coast go for less than 30 cents on a dollar. And so people have forgotten what happened in that, you know, with that downturn. And that was the first attempted downturn out of this 6 long-term economic cycle. The second came with COVID, with the COVID top. And, of course, they hit that with so much liquidity and blown us up here. But here's my point. I digress. Got to paint the picture. Can't help myself. But you look back to your question about crude oil, and you say, well, lower crude oil prices is better for the economy. Well, give you a hardcore example. As we knew, you know, and I made the forecast then, I knew that the advance out of the 02 four-year cycle low was extended. I had said that it would decline once we got the peak. I said that the decline would take us below the 02 low, and I'm talking about on the industrials, and it did. And so as we moved into that frothy top, and that all that decline began with equities and housing and all that sort of thing, crude oil continued higher. That's when crude oil moved to the all-time high up in the 147, 148 range, 149, whatever it was, high 140s, mid-high 140s. And then ultimately crude oil crashed down into the $30 range. And so in 08. So crude oil went with the market. In that case, crude oil lagged because it topped after equities. It topped in 08, and equities, again, was October of 09, or excuse me, October of 07. And so you look at it and you say, well, the decline in crude oil from $147, $48, whatever it was, down to $30, well, that was positive for the market. No, it wasn't. It was reflective of the deflationary bust. And I believe that we're seeing the same thing here. I think that this is perceived as good, but and it is. I mean, obviously, it's less painful to fill up your vehicle. That's great, but I think it's painting a bigger picture when you connect the dots at what's really going on with these cycles. I think that crude oil is reflective of the deflationary pressures to come in the economy and everything else.
Tim, anything else we need to keep a close eye on right now?
No, I mean, I'm following all of this in the research letter, and looking under the hood in this next edition with what's going on with the economy, looking at all the signposts, and then of course ultimately structure of the market will tell us. When we have something, when we have a toehold where this thing can turn. So it's just a matter of monitoring. And until we get there, we're not there. And it just goes on and on and on and on. But it doesn't change the environment we're in. And the signposts are there. And that's what I monitor in the letter. So in great detail. So anyone interested in that, it's available at Cycles News and Views.
Tim, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Thank you.
My guest has been Tim Cyclesman Wood, editor of Cycles News and Views on Cyclesman.com. If you have any questions for Tim or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.